But first, let's continue the alliteration by talking to Bruce about Biden and other matters arising. Bruce, before we get stuck into what is an interesting agenda for us today, it must be very busy at the Dart Centre, given all the stress the journalists are on at the moment.
This has been a challenging time for journalists around the world. Between Ukraine and COVID and not just in the U.S., around the world, my colleagues are dealing with a steady load of crisis and violence and tragedy in their reporting, and are dealing as well with a lot of upheaval in the profession. So my colleagues and I at the Dart Center have been keeping busy, in some ways busier than we have ever been, responding to requests from news organizations and trying to help create some resources to help journalists through this challenging period.
Bruce, let's start with the sudden announcement that you no longer have to wear a mask on planes, trains, basically any form of public transport, or indeed on Late Night Live. How did this come about?
This was a bit of a surprise. The CDC had extended its mask mandate until May 3rd. But the other day in Washington, a federal judge few people had even heard of before, Judge Catherine Gimbel Mizell, a Trump appointee in Florida, handed down a stunning decision in which she declared the mandate unconstitutional, saying that the CDC had exceeded its legal authority under the Public Health Services Act of 1944. A few things were really notable about this ruling, besides the fact that it was a judge that few had attended to, only 33 years old, appointed by President Trump and confirmed by the Senate, despite having been found unqualified by the American Bar Association. This is a ruling that you would not normally think would shake up the whole country. But Judge Mizell, A, cast it in broad terms. B, she did so without so much as a hearing. She decided that written briefs were enough and she wasn't going to even hear oral arguments. And she did it through what I can only describe as a very ideological, narrow, and crabbed ruling, saying essentially that mask wearing doesn't count as sanitation. That sanitation should only be understood, which is the language of the law, should only be understood as actually getting rid of viruses. Masks don't actually get rid of viruses, and therefore the whole thing is null and void. It's interesting. Under normal circumstances, you would expect the CDC or the Justice Department, actually, to immediately appeal such a ruling. But there has been, a groundswell of varying opinion and a groundswell of unhappiness with the mask mandate, growing dissatisfaction.
It's funny, isn't it, that Trump's toxic tentacles, more alliteration, still extend.
Indeed. 2 years now after he's left office, the impact of his ideology and his COVID policies are still altering the direction of the country. But what's interesting, we are going into the midterms, of course, and we are headed into the warm summer months here. And President Biden may or may not decide to appeal this ruling. Tonight, the Justice Department seemed to be indicating that they might, just on the basis of the grounds on which it was decided. But almost immediately after the ruling was handed down, the Transportation Security Administration announced it was not going to be enforcing the mask mandate any longer on public transit or in airports, though local governments can still attempt to do so. And Biden himself said, well, really, it should be up to Americans whether to wear masks or not. You could almost sense the argument going on within the White House. On the one hand, Ashish Jha, the new COVID czar, tweeted that he was profoundly disappointed with Judge Mizell's ruling. And on the other hand, You can hear the kind of realpolitik calculations on the political side of the White House, people wondering, are Americans simply tired of this? The airlines are clamoring to end the mask mandate. Is this a kind of a tar trap that is going to stick on us going into the elections if we try to appeal the mask mandate now, even though, of course, there has been a bit of an uptick in COVID cases thanks to the new variant. Not as bad as Europe, but we are seeing in New York City, for example, a bit more COVID. My own university, Columbia University, has returned to requiring masks in classrooms. So there's a real argument going on now between public health folks on the one hand and more political voices who are sensing that this is a dangerous issue for the White House.
I understand there's been cheering on planes mid-flight when they've heard the announcement.
This was evidently the case. It appears that the vast majority of people in planes are still masking. But a lot of, I think, a lot of flight attendants are probably both distressed and relieved, distressed that they may be more exposed, relieved that they no longer have to get into fights with passengers that have too often ended in flight attendants being assaulted. You know, the strain of American craziness that President Trump unleashed with his refusal to mask, with his embrace of ivermectin and all the other insanity way back when, which we thought we had sort of put behind us, still plays out in airplanes around the country, still plays out in stores, still plays out with people seeking to make a kind of individual, primitive libertarian statement about their right to breathe. Now those folks have a court ruling supporting them, and public health is taking a back seat.
Now, let's turn to the other pandemic which continues to wreak havoc in your country, and that, of course, gun violence, up to and including the shooting in the New York subway last week.
Indeed. It's been a scary time. We did have that horrific event in the New York City subways and a very quick arrest of the perpetrator who turned himself in. We also had a mass shooting over the weekend in South Carolina at a mall, shoppers out for Easter sales, pre-Easter sales, caught in the crossfire, it seems, between a couple of groups of people having an argument. There is genuinely a rising level of gun violence.
Well, let's just look at the figures here. 21,000 gun deaths in the U.S. last year, including 693 designated mass shootings.
That's right. And those gun death numbers are up considerably for just a few years, from just a few years earlier than that. If you go back, let's say, to 2014, 2015, you'll find the total number of deaths 10-15% lower, and the number of mass shootings at half that. And since 2019-2020, it's really spiked upward by a significant percentage. And it's a little deceptive because the number of suicides has remained basically the same over all this time. So the real spike is in interpersonal violence. It's in mass shootings. It's in assaults. And the question is, you know, what's causing it? It's focused, not exclusively, but disproportionately, of course, in cities and among the poor. But it's not limited to cities, as that South Carolina and as the incident in Columbia, South Carolina, illustrated. This is
now
a dangerous time.
Joe Biden has announced new measures to clamp down on ghost guns. What the hell is a ghost gun?
Ghost guns are essentially very cheap and easy to manufacture guns that you can make at home. using an electronic printer. They're not traceable. They don't last very long, but they don't have to last very long. They're not very tough or resilient, and they're becoming more and more of a problem in especially guns in the hands of young people and other kinds of situations around the country. Biden has taken the lead in challenging these ghost guns, and it is, of course, it puts him up against the NRA and the gun lobby, which will oppose any kind of gun legislation. He has, of course, argued for a return to the assault weapons ban, much more substantial, of the 1990s, but that is a non-starter in this Congress and in this time.
So it is legal to sort of buy these flatback IKEA guns and blaze away.
It's legal to manufacture them. It's legal to sell them at gun shows. There's still the gun show loophole where people don't have to have background checks if they buy guns in certain limited circumstances. It's not just about the violence itself, not just about the shootings themselves, but about the role of fear on the one hand, fear of crime on the one hand, and that, again, that sort of primitive libertarian streak around guns this time that so colors American politics. Biden in the 90s, made his name nationally in many ways as a proponent of what he would describe as common sense gun reform and of other criminal justice reforms, some of which were good, like the Violence Against Women Act, some of which turned out to be the engines of mass incarceration, mandatory minimum sentences, and so on. In some ways, Biden is now back in that time. The 90s, like now, were a period of escalating gun violence. I remember in my city in New Haven, where I'm talking from tonight, in a period of just a couple of years from the late 80s to the early 90s, gun deaths doubled in a small city from maybe 10 a year to 20 more. One year, I think 35. We're nowhere near that number yet, but it has been going up over the course of the last several years. Some people think it's a pandemic effect. Some people would argue it's about the market being flooded with guns that were deregulated during the Trump years and the Bush years. There's a lot going on here, but it is a big issue, and it poses a real dilemma for Biden and his party and an opportunity for Republicans, since they both get to stir up the base by campaigning against even getting rid of ghost guns, and they get to play on fear of crime and demand law and order and portray Democrats as weak.
Bruce, let's switch topics. If gun lovers aren't happy with Biden, nor are climate activists.
Well, indeed. Well, or at least climate activists are quite dampened in their enthusiasm. Biden has been, in recent weeks, after campaigning on climate change quite aggressively, really playing both sides of the street. On the one hand, just the other day, he has opened up more land for drilling, expanded drilling in the Arctic, and tapped the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and decided that there needs to be, as fuel prices go up, an increase in supply, and that means unleashing the oil companies to do a lot more. That has really riled climate activists. Now, on the other hand, he did get some cheers yesterday for restoring a key environmental regulation which the Trump administration had gutted, namely the requirement for environmental impact statements when there's highways and bridges and major federally subsidized projects going on. That actually is a big deal. But the pivot toward increasing the American petroleum supply has disturbed a lot of the president's advocates. And we also note that his chief climate advisor, Gina McCarthy, who is a key figure in the climate change movement, is apparently going to be resigning, supposedly out of frustration, in leaving the White House.
Now, Joe has told Barack that he'll run for re-election in 2024, according at least to a Washington website, The Hill. So, once again, Trump versus Biden.
Could well be. I think that, you know, there are still an awful lot of unknowns in that. We are in a world of cascading events. There is this little war going on between Russia and Ukraine, which is going to continue changing all our lives for a while. There are two older gentlemen whose health may or may not allow them to run. And interestingly, in a interview the other day, Trump himself made a strange offhanded reference to, well, you never know what the doctors are going to tell you. And that, you know, that's the kind of thing that may have meant nothing or may have been a tell of something that is in Trump's mind all along. The most interesting thing here on the potential rematch front, I think, is that the other day, or last week, I should say, in an interview with American historians, Trump, for the first time, admitted that he lost the election in 2020. He actually used the phrase, when I lost, or when we lost. The word lost has never been in his vocabulary before. That is
well,
not
and it's a very limited vocabulary at best.
And, you know, the other part of it is that the Trump has the same problem going into this next presidential cycle, and indeed the Republicans have going into these midterms, that Trump had in 2020, which is that the more he excites his own base, the more he plays the resentment card, the more alienated moderate voters, swing voters, suburban voters who might have voted Republican decide to stay home or decide to vote Democratic. It is still, despite Biden's plummeting numbers, a truly volatile situation, both going into the fall and going into the next presidential
election.
We've
just had a Shapiroette with Bruce, exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.